Counsel, your last but obviously not least, you have the whole courtroom to yourself. If you didn't hear the statements earlier, if you could make sure that Mr. Shorter has the sign-in sheet, that would be appreciated. When you begin your argument, Helen, if you could let us know if you want to reserve any time for a rebuttal, that would be appreciated. You may begin when ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Cornett. I represent Town and Country Hospital. I would like to request that 2 minutes be reserved for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
This matter is before you on appeal from the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission. By way of background, the claimant suffered a compensable injury by accident. The claimant suffered some injuries, I believe, to his knee. He subsequently needed some additional surgery. By that time, he had moved down to Florida, and the surgery was performed by Town and Country Hospital in Florida. Now, the hospital is licensed to operate by the state of Florida and is not and has never been licensed to operate by the Commonwealth of Virginia. The claimant's need for treatment was denied by the employer initially, who subsequently abandoned their defenses, and the hospital was subsequently paid by the workers' comp carrier. The claimant's counsel then requested that the commission award him a fee pursuant to Virginia Code Section 65.2-714. That fee was, in fact, awarded to the claimant's counsel, but the commission, quite frankly, did not have jurisdiction to award that fee. 65.2714 governs the fees of attorneys and physicians and hospital charges. This section allows for a fee to be assessed against a healthcare provider to be paid to claimant's attorney in the event that a contested claim is found to be compensable and results in payment being made to the healthcare provider. In defining the term healthcare provider, though, the statute references 8.01581.1. That statute defines healthcare provider as a person, corporation, facility, or institution licensed by the Commonwealth to provide healthcare professional services. It is uncontested that Town and Country Hospital was not and has never been licensed to practice or licensed to operate within the Commonwealth.
Did Town and Country in this case accept any payment in this case?
It did. It was paid by the insurance carrier.
Okay, and there's a case out there, obviously unpublished, Murphy versus Woodside Association Limited Partnership. What would you say is the flaw in the reasoning of that case?
Actually, there are two flaws, and that case did in fact hold that pursuant to 65.2700, the commission had authority to rule on essentially every case that involved a workers' comp claim. The problem is, while the commission focused its attention on the provision that said all questions arising under this title, it ignored the portion of that statute that said except as otherwise herein provided. So the commission absolutely had the right to rule on whether or not a 714 fee is owed by a healthcare provider, but the General Assembly did not define healthcare provider as a out-of-state provider that was not licensed by the Commonwealth. So Murphy does not apply in this particular situation. Also, the Murphy Court relied on the Sims matter, and that case dealt with an in-state provider. So Sims basically said, hey, look, if you're going to accept money from the carrier in a workers' compensation claim, then you, healthcare provider, are deemed to have accepted the act. The problem is that particular case dealt with a hospital in Fairfax, which obviously was or should have been licensed to operate by the Commonwealth, and therefore it clearly had jurisdiction over that entity. Well, if the entity is not licensed to practice or licensed to operate within the Commonwealth and therefore does not fall under the definition of a healthcare provider, then the commission does not have jurisdiction over it. So what I'm asking you to do, which is to find that the commission had jurisdiction, is not in any way, shape, or form contrary to those particular cases.
Wouldn't the easy remedy then would have been for Town and Country when payment was made for the services that were provided is to say we reject same so as not to confer jurisdiction on the commission to deal with us and any ultimate determinations that may need to be made?
Well, certainly, but then what does it do? It provided over $100,000 in services to the claimant. Quite frankly, we don't have evidence as to whether or not they knew it was a workers' comp claim. Surely they got a check from a workers' comp or from an insurance company. So I honestly can't tell you whether they thought, oh, look, this is a workers' comp claim. We're going to accept the money, but oh my goodness, it may provide jurisdiction.
We got a check. Let's cash it.
We got a check. Let's cash it. Exactly, Your Honor. And they never thought that, hey, this might cause us to have a claim and have to hire an attorney and argue in front of the Court of Appeals up in Virginia.
But isn't that the same sort of theory, though, that is when you have a situation where you may have some reason to believe that the court doesn't have jurisdiction over you, and there's the ability to make it a special appearance, and if you don't make a special appearance, then you're basically stuck with jurisdiction being exercised over you?
I don't think that was ever even considered, quite frankly. I mean, these are healthcare providers. They're not attorneys. They're not real estate brokers. They're not, in wills and trusts. This is a hospital who provided surgical services to an injured person who got a check, and then all of a sudden, months and months later, some entity up in Virginia is saying, hey, you owe an attorney up in Virginia $20,000 out of your bill. And, they don't have any clue as to what's going on. They don't know that there's jurisdiction anywhere out there. All they know is they provided services, an insurance company sent them a check, and now they're being asked to carve out $20,000, over $20,000 out of their fee and send it up to Virginia. And according to the statute, they're not a healthcare provider as defined by the act.
I mean, assuming for the sake of discussion that we actually get to that issue on the merits, talk about the timeliness of your claim to set aside the deputy commissioner's determination.
Sure. Your Honor, quite frankly, I think this ended up being a comedy of errors. What happened was the provider rendered the services. So the provider rendered the services. In October of 2013, the hospital was sold to HCA. So Town and Country Hospital, the entity, no longer owns the hospital. On October 22nd of 2013, claimant's counsel filed a claim with the commission asking for the 714 fee to be awarded. On October 24th of 2013, the commission issued an on-the-record hearing notice, which essentially puts it under the on-the-record hearing docket. It's nothing more than saying, hey, people, you need to provide us with your explanation in writing as to why you think that the fee is awarded or not awarded. Unfortunately, that was not sent to the hospital. And you can look at the document itself. The actual on-the-record hearing notice has on the back page, which is in the appendix, the list of all the parties that notice is sent to. That notice was never sent to the hospital. So I know there's been some issues as to whether it should have been sent to the registered agent, given that the hospital had been sold. But needless to say, the hospital was never sent the notice of hearing. So it had no idea that an on-the-record hearing had even been scheduled. On October 31st of 2013, Ms. Lee, Deputy Commissioner Lee, issues a letter to the parties regarding potential for alternative dispute resolution. The hospital did not receive that notice. On November the 13th of 2013, the claimant's attorney did file his position statement with the commission. The hospital did, by some instance, receive a copy of that, but when they got it, they had no idea what relevance it had to anything. But all they knew is that they were getting a statement from an attorney.
Although, and I'm glad you point that out, counsel, although this notice of hearing that should have been emanating from the commission did not occur, you did get the position statement, and that occurred on about 11/19/13, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Or eventually it filtered down from whoever it was sent to the hospital. Yes.
So there was at least some notice, whether it was the notice that one would traditionally get, there was some notice that something was going on, wasn't it?
There was some notice that something was going on, although they had no idea what exactly was going on, Your Honor.
And would it be fair to say that even though they had noticed that something was going on, Town and Country chose not to do anything within that 30 days?
Well, the statement of position would have been filed after the notice of on the record.
So filed on November 19th, 2013.
Right.
A full week before the deputy commissioner issued her decision or opinion.
Correct. So they didn't get that. What they got was that you're right. And so they get the position statement. They don't understand what's going on. They don't know what it is. And you're right. They took no action thinking that there was really nothing to do, mistakenly.
Okay. Thank you.
So then, of course, they call me. I take a look and find out, sure enough, an order was entered. And we filed. Actually, what happened was I had actually filed a motion for the matter to be sent to the on the record hearing docket, and I get a letter from Ms. Lee saying it's already been decided and we're way too late. But Your Honor,
and also your client, and obviously we're not holding you at fault because you were trying to clean up the mess. But there was a statement from the appellant that said, "quote, did not recognize the significance of such documents." So. Again, sort of sitting on their rights and privileges and then expecting us to sort of come in at the end and say, well, we're going to fix all that even though you all made mistakes. And in this case, there was no suggestion of there being any fraud or anything like that. It was just your client chose or did not do anything.
I can't argue that. They did something. They didn't do it as timely as I would certainly
appreciate.
That would
be a better way of stating it. Yes, sir.
But again, Your Honor, that certainly may go to the effect or to the argument as to whether or not the commission had the right to vacate, but it doesn't necessarily affect whether or not the commission had jurisdiction to enter the award in the first place. And I don't think, you know, even the commission recognized that it had the right to vacate the award if it did not have jurisdiction. So the fact that the time limits may have run on the ability to argue the case in front of the commission or to have the commission take some other action such as a hearing or reconsideration, that doesn't necessarily prevent this court from taking the action, which is saying, hey, you didn't have jurisdiction to start with, and so therefore the award for 714 fees is invalid in any situation. So that's and again, Your Honor, I think they do not have jurisdiction. The only place where healthcare provider is defined that I'm aware of in the act is this reference by the legislature to that provision, which says that a healthcare provider is not has to be licensed by the Commonwealth of Virginia. Within the four corners of that statute, there's a definition. It references a definition. And so to say that, well, we're going to ignore that definition, it just simply makes no sense.
Let me ask you this, then. We have to give these things plain meaning and application. Suppose we have a person who is a commercial pilot or something, all right, and they're flying their airplane, and they're based at Dulles Airport, and they're flying down to Florida, and heaven forbid there's an accident, and the pilot is injured. So obviously he's within the scope of his employment, you know, rises out of what he's doing. And they take him in, and they want to make sure that they can do something to save his life. So they take him to the hospital down in Florida. And the good hospital down in Florida provides services for this individual because it is a situation where they want to try to help this person live. And the employer says, okay, if this was appropriate, the insurance company says this is the right thing to do, and they send money down to this Florida doctor, our medical facility. Are you saying that just because they're not a licensed health care provider in the Commonwealth of Virginia that this individual is injured is not covered by the workers' comp law?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I think it's clearly covered because the statutes and the legislature has made clear that those things are covered. What would not be covered, though, is when his case was argued, was found, or was disputed and found to be compensable, the claimant's attorney could not go back and get a fee from that out-of-state entity because of the way the law was written, because of the way the legislature has defined healthcare provider. If the legislature had just left that reference out of the statute, we would not be here today. Because if they had left that reference out of the statute, then the commission would have been free to define healthcare provider as it saw fit. It would have been able to define it as everybody, we all know what a healthcare provider is. But the legislature didn't do that. The legislature specifically put a reference to a definition which does not include a out-of-state, unlicensed by the Commonwealth provider. And if they had intended
You're into rebuttal time. We'll give you another minute at the back end. The question I want you to think about while you're sitting there is, what do you believe the purpose of the statute was in making a reference to a licensed health care provider in the Commonwealth of Virginia? If you could think about that while you're sitting down and listening to your able colleague, it would be helpful. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. May it please the Court, David Falcon on behalf of the appellee, Reginald Davis. I want to start with that point that Mr. Cornett was addressing, which is the definition of healthcare provider. The statute actually says in Section 714, subsection B, which is the section that is at issue today, a contested claim is an initial contested claim for benefits and claims for medical, surgical, and hospital services that are subsequently contested and litigated. There is no exclusion in the statute for out-of-state providers. There's no indication whatsoever that the legislature intended to treat out-of-state providers any differently from in-state providers.
So I want you to answer the question that I'm going to ask him on rebuttal. What is the purpose of that reference in the statute that he makes reference to?
The purpose of that reference, and in fact, that's not referenced in Section 16B, it's referenced down in Section D, and the complete line reads, no physician, hospital, or other healthcare provider as defined in 801-581.1. The definition is for the purposes of defining healthcare provider, but physician and hospital are also listed in that subsection. So I don't believe that the interpretation is to define a physician and a hospital as being one that only operates in the state of Virginia. Let's not forget that Section 65.2-714 not only addresses the ability of the Commission to control the fees of attorneys rendered from these hospital bills, but also to control the amount of the bills themselves. And I see no scenario in which the legislature would say in Section 65.2A, we're addressing all healthcare providers, all medical providers throughout the United States. But in Section B, that part only applies if you're in the state of Virginia. I think that's an absurd result. I think that if the interpretation is that limited, then what we have is a situation where somebody does go down to Florida, get hurt. The commission has jurisdiction to decide injuries that occur out of state so long as they meet the foreign injury provisions. There's simply no way in which the commission could administer a claim for a person injured in Nebraska and not have jurisdiction over the hospital that treated him in Nebraska.
Particularly if it accepts the fees for the services provided.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to further that issue, Your Honor brought up the point about whether the hospital could have rejected the payment and did not do so. Actually, it's very interesting. If you look at pages 38 through 51 of the appendix, one of the things that I provided to the hospital in the documents that they did receive was a breakdown of the payments that had been made by Mr. Cornett's client. And if you look at the very first page above the trade name of the insurance company, New Hampshire Insurance, it says jurisdiction Virginia. And that's actually repeated throughout the documents, and that's something that was submitted to them and that they did actually receive prior to the 30-day expiration of the review period. Now, with regard to the issue of whether or not Town and Country Hospital was denied due process, I argue that they did not. They were not. First of all, we're dealing with a factual determination made by the commission, which is binding on the court.
Well, you concede that the commission, in its approach to dealing with this, did not handle it in the statutorily or administratively appropriate way.
Well, it's unclear whether or not the notice was actually sent. It appears from the appendix that it was not. But what's not clear, what is clear is that his client did not receive that. I'll concede that point, that they didn't receive the notice of hearing in a manner that would allow them to have acted on it. However, they did receive the statement that I filed subsequently, which included many of those same documents that had previously been sent, including what is required by statute, which is a notice apprising the hospital of the fact that I intended to pursue an attorney's fee, and that if they did not respond within a certain period of time, I would file a motion with the commission. The other thing is, and although I'll concede that they may not have received the notice on the record hearing, what I'm not willing to concede is that they did not receive the fee request, they did not receive a copy of the motion, they did not receive two letters recommending that they submit to alternative dispute resolution. A review of the commission file in the appendix reflects that none of these documents were returned under liberable. That means somebody at the hospital was getting them and not acting on them. And as you very well know, if you receive a summons from an out-of-state court and fail to act on it, you do so at your peril, and I think the same thing is applicable here. So what wind up happening is that the commission made a factual determination that the request for review had not been filed within 30 days. That's a jurisdictional requirement, 65.2-705. The commission does not have jurisdiction to hear a review filed beyond that period unless there is a showing of fraud, mistake, or imposition. No such showing appears in this case. Now, despite all of this, the commission still reviewed the case de novo, which means that Mr. Cornett's client did have their opportunity to be heard on the merits before the full commission in their review statement. Now, they could have argued that the fee awarded was too high, that the process or the claim did not qualify under the provisions of 714. What they argued was lack of notice and jurisdiction, and those were the issues that were addressed by the full commission on review. With regard to the issue of whether or not the papers were filed on the appropriate party, there's no requirement in the act that they be served on the registered agent. They were served on the hospital at the same address to which the payments were made, and as we see from the record, at least some of that correspondence got through. It's important to note that the commission administers thousands of these claims on a yearly basis, and certainly there are hundreds of letters that are sent by the commission and never reach their destination. One I'm most familiar with is where my client is issued a hearing notice and never receives it. Maybe they've moved, maybe they didn't update their address on a timely basis. Unfortunately, there's a situation where the commission, what they do is they review the correspondence in their file. They determine if that mail has been sent back. And if it's sent back, then the person is given another opportunity. The same standard is applied to insurance companies. As Mr. Cornett can tell you, if the insurance company doesn't show up for a hearing and the commission hasn't gotten a letter back saying that they didn't get a copy of the hearing, that case is held, is tried in the absence of the insurance company, which is a very harsh result. But I don't know any other way that the commission can administer the system and not have to keep resetting hearings and resending the same documents that were previously sent. What I see here is that the appellants are trying to get a second bite at the apple. They had the opportunity to respond for whatever reason. They did not do so. They had the opportunity to be heard on review. They're now trying again to have the same issue relitigated a third time, and there's no evidence in the record to demonstrate why they should be treated differently from any other party that comes before the commission. Now, with the jurisdictional issue, what it boils down to is essentially two concepts: statutory interpretation and legislative intent. As I mentioned before, Section 714 not only addresses attorney's fees, but addresses the jurisdiction of the commission to determine how much these providers should be paid. As Mr. Cornett indicated, the statute permits and empowers the commission to decide payment for hospitals in California, Texas, wherever. So if the appellant's interpretation of the statute is adopted, then what that would mean is that any provider that treats a claimant outside of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Washington Hospital Center, University of Maryland, Georgetown, right across the river, would have no recourse by which to get their bills paid or submit those disputes to the commission. And of course, that would include a Florida hospital. But the reality is that the correct interpretation is the one that was addressed by the commission on review, which is simply a restatement of the law from this court.
Basically, what you're suggesting then, from the insurance company standpoint, it's either an opt-in or an opt-out. If they don't want to receive payment for services, then they can reject seeing the client because they has an insurance deficiency, and I hope we would never get to that point. Or they could say, well, we're going to accept and we're going to provide services, and we realize that because of that, we've accepted the responsibility of addressing any attorney's fees claim if it does indeed come.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, that first scenario that you described where people are turned away is the very concern that I have with the interpretation as broad as what Mr. Cornett is suggesting, which is that there are a lot of places where they will not treat out-of-state compensation patients for that very reason. There's an uncertainty about getting paid. Where do I need to go to litigate my bill if they only send me $10,000 of a $100,000 bill? And for those very concerns, there's often difficulty in getting Virginia patients treated out of state. So the interpretation that the commission held was that the acceptance of payment from the insurance carrier it submits the provider to jurisdiction within the Commonwealth. And that's not a new concept. As was noted previously, this court decided that in the case of Fairfax Hospital versus Sines. My belief, Your Honor, is that if the legislature wanted to exclude out-of-state providers from the statute, then they would have excluded out-of-state providers from the statute. There's no indication that that was their intent. There's no indication that the hospital didn't have an opportunity to be heard before the commission twice. For that basis, we would request that the commission affirm the full, that the court affirm the full commission's opinion.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Counsel in rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor, you'd ask me why I thought that they put that provision in there. And the only thing that I can think of is that they did want to make a difference. They did want to set up a difference between in-state and out-of-state providers. And quite frankly, the recent enactment or changes to 652605.1, I think, support my position. The commission has argued that that particular provision actually bolstered, you know, they relied on that in finding that, in ruling against us. But that statute actually supports our position. That statute states that out-of-state healthcare providers who provide services to claimants are to be reimbursed as provided by this section. If the legislature had all along had the intent that there was no difference between out-of-state and in-state providers, then why on earth was that statute enacted? Why do we have to make that difference? Why do we have to specifically give out-of-state providers certain rights under the commission if they had them all along? I think clearly what happened is the legislature realized there was a loophole, they realized there was a problem, and 65.2605, which was enacted last year and which would not be applicable to what happened years ago when the 714 fee was awarded, I think that was to correct this situation and to make clear from that point forward that the two were essentially the same. Out of state and in state were going to be the same. But if that situation had been the case all along, we would not have needed, the legislature would not have needed to enact that provision. It would be irrelevant.
All right, sir. Thank you for your presentation, both of you. We'll come down to Greek Council and we'll adjourn for